Welcome back, everyone, to the Amateur Theatre Podcast and episode number 7. A really nice conversation for you today. We are talking to Kelly Stewart. She's an actress who currently resides in Cambridge, finishing off her degree there, but was over in Oxford for the summer and worked with me on Much Ado About Nothing. She is a font of knowledge and information and experience, having been through a load of different things and pursued acting from around the age of 7. We get into the weeds a lot, which is really great, and we discuss all manner of things, big headline topics of letting go and failure and drama school and understanding how to interact with your fellow actors, what you can learn from gaining experience and how you can apply that to your acting, the good things about amateur theatre and how to make it better. And also we continue to build on this toolkit that I'm trying to amass while talking to everyone. And Kelly feeds in a load of new ideas and thoughts that you'll definitely benefit from listening to. So sit back and enjoy.
So we should probably start with just getting an idea, if you wouldn't mind, of like how you ended up, or how you've ended up where you are now in terms of like acting and stuff, what you've done. Feel free to go back to when you were 6 and you were doing whatever, but generally what you feel might have like shaped how and where you
when I was 5 I joined a state school. There's that. I did drama all throughout school and absolutely loved it, and I basically decided when I was like 10 that I wanted to be an actor. I'm very specific. I wanted to be a Shakespeare actor. I was mental. Like, my mum always tells the story. It's so funny to me. I was 7 and I asked for a complete works of Shakespeare for kids from the mobile library. And my mum was like, "You're so weird. Okay, then." And that was what I wanted to do for ages after. I desperately wanted to be in a Shakespeare play. And obviously that wasn't happening anytime soon. I just did musicals for ages, kind of barely getting in because I could only like just sing, but really wanting to do acting. And then the big change was for me, I made a conscious decision when I was in year 11 to leave my school and not do the sixth form there. And I went to the Henry College.
Year 11 is opposite GCSEs, right? So that's like...
Yeah, so finished my GCSEs going into A-level.
Okay, so 16?
Yeah. When I was 16, basically. And I left the girls' school to Dickot Girls. I went to the Henley College. And the main reason I did that was because I went to an open day and I'd heard really good things about their drama department.
Okay.
And I went, and the teacher was called Nick Saunders. And he liked the open day. And I was like, this is incredible. This is where I want to go. And I remember I spoke to him and I was like, should I do A-levels or BTEC? Because the BTEC Performing Arts had like a really good reputation, but that was singing, acting, dancing. And that was it. You know, you did that count of 3 A-levels. And I was very torn because I was like still very nerdy. And so I didn't like, I still wanted to do like English. I was going to do maths as well. Like I like very much like, I kind of wasn't quite ready to like completely go one way. And I remember he was like, well, he just asked me a few questions and I was like, and he was like, you used to do the A-levels. I think, you're clearly too interested in other stuff as well. Yeah. And that's kind of in the story of my life of like absolutely loving drama and acting and wanting to do that, but always being a little bit too distracted by everything else I'm interested in, right, and being a bit too interested in everything. That was always, so my issue was always balancing between loving acting and really wanting to do it and hating everything associated with the industry, basically, yeah, and having a real dichotomy of those two things,
right,
not really fitting my enjoyment of my personality. I'm quite an introvert. People always are like, no, you're not, when I tell them that, but I am. I'm a massive introvert, and I think it's from my experience anyway, afterwards of trying to become an actor and having a taste of the industry, I think it's very hard. I think it's really hard. I hold my hat to people who are professional actors and introverts, because so much of it involves being...
You have to schmooze a lot. You have to be pushing. You have to be like... Mm-hmm. There's so much. Yeah, I just literally interviewed someone who is a professional actor currently, and he just said the one thing that's putting him off continuing to do it is that it ceases to be so much about the acting and getting the jobs as who you can talk to, how you talk to them, what angle you can come in at, and also the shit that comes with being cast or not being cast or doing auditions and people just going, no, I don't like your hair, it's brown, see you later, or whatever the crazy decision they make about why you didn't get the part. And that, you know,
it's extremely physically based as well, and that was the big thing for me that really has always put me off. I hate that. I remember particularly when I was at drama school and they were teaching us, and I remember they said, in a way it's comforting to know, but also it's kind of horrible, people are generally going to know if you're right for a part 20 seconds you've walked through the door, and it's all kind of based on what you look like. Because they have an idea in their heads of what that character looks like, particularly, I guess, I mean, I think that is particularly if you're doing like TV and film, even more so than necessarily theatre. But those were multiple things that always conflicted with me. And then I think the other interest thing has just always been exactly what I kind of used to get in trouble at drama school for, is that I've always liked talking about the text itself that like I'm working with, and what the author's doing, and like really dissecting that. Like basically what I do in English literature, which I'm studying now. That's always been there for me. And for me, I enjoy acting most when those two things kind of get to be combined. And that was the other thing that I think, in hindsight, is another reason I struggled a little bit when going to drama school and feeling like those things just weren't
compatible.
Or like is it symbiotic? I don't know if that's the right word. I went down the A-levels route, and I basically, like a mad person, just studied like crazy and got really into it, and was able to do quite well, but at the same time was auditioning for drama school, so I didn't apply to uni at the time, and I managed to get in to Mountview for foundation, and I did a year there, and then after that I did a short course diploma at Guildhall. So that was like my two sort of years of training, if that makes any sense. I think for me it was one of those things where I did my A-levels and I had this very clear idea in my head of what I wanted, and the big reason was because of this. When I did all the auditions at drama schools, obviously I was auditioning for BAs as well as foundations, but very aware that like I probably wasn't going to get into a BA at 18. So I moved to London and I started my foundation, and I had a very mixed experience, I think is the best.
You had a shit time, is what
you're saying. Yeah, I had an awful time, basically. And I really questioned whether this was something I wanted to do anymore.
Was that? That's the obvious
I think
question.
It's the reality of it, right? Because I think when you're at school, there's such a different experience of what drama and acting is. And it's that step up meets also, you're looking at acting as a career, and there's, I think, a massive difference between something that you do for fun and what you do for a career. I've had a few friends like that who, like, for example, like, were really good at sports in some way and like did quite well for ages and kind of wanted to be a professional in that sport. And then the second they kind of got to that level where you kind of are bridging into professional, the fun goes is like how I felt anyway. I really struggled to enjoy it at all.
Because of the drama school.
Because I think a big part of this story is like my experience at Guildhall afterwards was amazing in comparison, and I had a much better time there. And a big reason why I went there afterwards, because I didn't get into any BAs again after that foundation, which was also really demoralizing, the constant, like, already I was feeling that like intensity of just auditioning and never quite making the mark and stuff. And it also didn't help that when I was at Mountview, I actually had some really good teachers while I was there and some stuff I really enjoyed. I also met some really nice people, but on the other hand, I also had other teachers who made it very clear if they thought you were wasting your time.
Right.
And I was one of those people who, I basically had this improv teacher who was like, on our day in which we did our performance showcase, like at the end of the foundation, like pulled me aside and was like, this isn't for you.
fuck that person.
And I was like 19 and I was very impressionable and I was like, oh, okay, well, if this guy who's like a professional in the industry is like,
you don't stand a chance,
then he's probably right, you know, like that kind of impression that you have like at that age. And especially because I didn't feel like I was doing well, and particularly because I don't think I was doing well in his class, which is an improv class.
Okay,
the combination
sorry.
Of those things was just not
just again, have in mind that someone listening is going through the same thing. What like, so I'll ask the slightly loaded question and then I'll ask the follow up, but were you just not good enough? I mean, I know as in loaded in the way that I've seen you act, so I know that's not true. So what was going on there? How was that manifesting?
There's a few things going on. And I think one of them, to be fair, and I think it's hard, and it was hard to accept at that age, was that my issue is I was there was a genuine downfall to my sort of somewhat academic approach, or my extremely passionate about theatre, extremely wanting to be part of you. Basically, there was an issue, but obviously I couldn't figure out what that was at the time. And when I went to Guildhall, I had a teacher who pulled me aside and said, you've got loads of potential, but you need to go down the pub more. He said, that's your issue. Okay. He was like, you need to learn to let go. So you need to go and live. You need to go and do something mental. You need to maybe get arrested. I don't know. He was like, fall in love, have your heart broken, go down the pub and stop worrying. And he made me cry. Like, he like tapped into like my deepest emotions ever. But basically I had a block, and that was definitely true. I kind of hit this ceiling, and the issue was, I just reached a point where I wasn't, like he said, like letting go. And it was crazy because that's all he needed to say. And I remember in our final showcase for Guildhall, like our final performance that you do to like everyone else at the school doing like the short courses, his thing was then when I do my scenes and I obviously like wasn't quite hitting it right, he just from the side, because he was like our director as well, he'd just go, Kelly, just let go. And that's what I do. And I did the best performance I think I'd ever done at that point. And so what I look back at that moment in Mount View was that he was right in the sense that I definitely hit a wall, that I wasn't progressing where my classmates were. And I felt that. It was one of the reasons why I wasn't enjoying myself. I felt like I was aware that I wasn't as good, but I was frustrated because I felt like I was doing so much work and I was working so hard and I was working harder than everyone else. And I didn't understand why my teachers were just so like, oh, every time I performed. And the issue was when I compare from my experience at that drama school to the other one, was that a teacher should be able to identify or work with you on what the issue is to help you get out of that.
Yeah, they shouldn't just say, sorry.
Yeah, it's not good enough. Yeah, because it's lazy. So I think it's the duality of, yes, there was a problem, but a good teacher scaffolds you and helps you.
Yeah. I can't see why, when you present something that you connect with or feel like you connect with, their response is to say, no, you'll do this. What hole had you dug that meant you were looking up and going, I can't get out, can you help me out? And they were like, no, stay down there, you're rubbish.
Yeah.
And then someone dropped a ladder in and said, climb out, come on, we'll help you out.
Yeah.
What was the hole?
I think I was a bit too set in my, I don't want to say set in my ways, but like, I'd always done very well at drama to that point.
Right.
At school. And I think one of the reasons for that was because I kind of learned the basics quite like quickly of like, you know, of it all, but I wasn't necessarily really present and connecting, if that makes any sense. Like, it was kind of almost that jump. It was like the whole thing of like, for example, one of the things I always really struggled with was like, I was never someone who could like cry on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I could never do it. And I never really got how people did do it. And I just figured like, oh, some people can't, whatever, kind of. That was my attitude. I think this is the best like analogy to describe what I feel like that block was.
Right.
So when I was told to like let go, one of the big things was me not thinking about the lines anymore, me not thinking about the homework. So that was the other thing, was that director who said that, they said, you come along and you take your homework and you're going to us, look, I've done the homework, when you're performing, and you need to like forget about it, like, and just be and like really think about what you're saying, be really present. So there was an element of like me not being present. Okay. Was probably the block as well, like the hole that I dug was, it was a self-conscious thing, which also, because later on I teach acting, the biggest thing I learned is that that's something extremely common in girls, because we're, I think, taught to be quite self-conscious quite quickly, particularly in our bodies, so we don't necessarily let go and breathe into it as naturally, because we're kind of taught to shrink and not take up space and all that kind of stuff. So I think there's that was part of it. And then the other thing was sort of the thing they say to me to Guildhall is like, you want to be a good actor too much. You're going, am I good? Can I be good? Tell me I'm good. Like that looking for validation.
Right.
Of that mixed with, I remember him, like the biggest thing, he was like, I want you to go out there and I want you to be absolutely awful. He's like, I want you to absolutely fail. I was like, he said, and his whole, so he had this big poster that used to be like, fail then fail better, was like his thing. And he used to say that the worst thing you can be on stage is someone trying to be a good actor.
Right.
And that was basically my blog, was I'd grown up being a good actor. Like I was like that kid who they're like, oh, Kelly loves drama. And Kelly could do like that part because she just loves it. Yeah. And I'd been, and also like I'd always kind of been rewarded for it because I'd done it from so young. When I was little, it was like one of those things of, I used to get praise and validation for it. So acting had kind of become like a, like this is probably the most personal aspect of it, was acting was like my validation.
Yeah.
People telling me I was good was my validation. That's what I wanted. Yeah. And I probably didn't handle not being taught I was good very well when I went to drama school, mixed with also, they don't tell you you're good. They only tell you when you're bad. Like if you're good, you don't hear anything. And that's kind of what you have to get used to. And it was a lot of it also was maturity. Like I think one of the biggest things I now say is like, I don't think I was so young, and from looking at myself now in comparison, it's sort of laughable, but it's also like, it was because I was just this like really like somewhat naive kid that just thought, I'm going to leave school, I'm going to go to this drama school, I'm going to do really well at this drama school, like because this is what I've always been good at, like, and that it's all of those kind of things. And I think it was why he said like the thing I need to do was basically just go out and live in the real world for a bit and escape sort of what I think is drilled into us from like the institution of school. And particularly for someone who's like did well at school, whatever, and the ways in which I think at school we're taught to seek validation, which is like, you know, getting the A, like kind of thing. But you don't get an A when you're doing drama, like that's not the point. So I think that like that's honestly what I think when I look back, the block was. It was the combination of desperately wanting to be a good actor, which meant that I was performing in a way that was very showing the work, as they used to say, like showing the work too much, not really present, not really letting go. And coming a bit from a place of wanting the viewer validation rather than just like being present and in the moment and like just doing it for me, basically.
Right. That makes sense.
So yeah, that was like, and I think was that was kind of what I'd learned at the end of Guildhall. And I was like, well, what do I do now? Because obviously I didn't have the A lined up, and I kind of was like, well, I guess I could like spend the next few years just keep auditioning for drama schools and kind of work in the meantime, which is kind of like an initial plan A. But I also remember distinctly, so this is like a really strong memory of mine, was like coming back, I was like 19, 20, going, like, yeah, I was like coming on to 20 years old at this point. And I like sat there with my family, you know, like, what are you going to do? And I was like, what do you want? I was like, I don't know. And they're like, what do you want? And I was like, I just really want to be happy. Like, and that was like where I'd got to from all of it. And I had no idea what I wanted anymore. And it was the first time in my life where I didn't know what I wanted. As well, like I think I'd always been someone who was very planned.
Yeah, if you're reading Shakespeare from Seven,
yeah,
and you're doing, yeah,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was like, I know the theatre's what I love. Maybe I don't want to be on that stage. I don't know, but maybe I do. I don't know. And I kind of basically needed to go and figure that out.
Right.
And I
had enough. You were kind of unlucky then, because a lot of people go through that dilemma at 16, 17. Mm-hmm. You deferred that moment until you were.
Yeah.
Whatever age coming out of.
Basically, yeah. And so basically I had enough training to apply to do be an assistant teacher at a youth theatre. That was basically what I did. I got that job.
Okay.
While I was in between And the other big thing was I'd done well in my A-levels when I left school. I genuinely think because I had an offer already at Foundation and Drama School, so I didn't have the pressure, because it's not based like, you know, you get in based on audition, doesn't matter what you get. So I'd done really well in my A-levels, and I was doing, so I got this job and I absolutely loved it. Like, I actually fell in love with it. And it was while I was teaching that I probably learned the most about myself as an actor as well.
Okay.
Looking at other kids and like, because also I was teaching from like reception to 18. So people who were like not much younger than me at all, was a very weird experience. One of the things that was really interesting was watching little things in kids, or like what, basically like looking at what like kids themselves, particularly around that like 18 age, where they're already like, where they're starting to think about, do they want to go to drama school, whatever, helping other people find their blocks and unblock them is really good for then figuring out what your own are and spotting stuff in yourself. Honestly, like, I think if you want to learn to do anything well, teach it. I feel like that was like, for me, like the biggest thing. And I did, and I basically taught over that kind of whole time. So I started as like this assistant and then kind of worked my way up, and then moved companies after a year to the Watermill Theatre, which I absolutely loved for that place so much. And I basically did a bunch of teaching assistant there, which I really enjoyed. And then, and I worked with some of those amazing people, most of which are people who are actors who teach on the side, in between getting work. Also just like the kindest place. I really think really highly of that theatre. And but the best part about that was where I met a woman called Lixie, who works in the education department and is one of the teachers. And I used to assist on one of her classes. And she is the, so she speaks sign language, and she does all of the sign integrated Shakespeare performances at the theatre itself. And I just found it absolutely fascinating, like what her work was. And I went to go see their sign integrated shows, and like, they just blew my mind. I thought they were like one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. And basically after that, I was like, okay, I want to learn sign language. Like, I want to be involved. This is so cool. And also what annoyed me more than anything is like, the Water was like a fairly small theatre company, I'd say. Like, you know, they're in Newbury, they're not London, which already always kind of, you know, you're always trying to like get the same, because everyone goes to London for the theatre kind of thing. And I was just thinking like, if this theatre company is doing this kind of really amazing work, like, why aren't the bigger ones? And that was kind of basically where my interest started going. And I more and more wanted to kind of work in the production side of things.
Okay.
And stuff. Meanwhile, that was all going on, I decided from doing that teaching, one of the things, part of like one of the jobs the Watermill gave me, was doing these things called education packs, which is basically where you work with the production. So you interview like the director and the actors in the show, and you research the play, and you put together like a series of sort of little pieces of writing that include like interviews, but also essays on the play and how it ties in with the production. And it's, they're given to schools who are studying those plays, who then come and see it. So one of the ones I did like was like The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde. And doing that really reminded me of how much I loved English literature and how much I loved that combination of sort of text studies with performance. So like taking some, all the stuff we kind of know when we do English literature and we study a play, and how do you then translate that into like a physical thing? I just like, it really reminded me of that. And like I said, I got good A-levels, and my dad had always, my whole life, had been like, you should really consider applying for Oxbridge. You should, like, you really should, like. And I was very unsure about doing that, and he forced me to a Cambridge open day basically, and took me around, and I kind of fell in love with it. Yeah, it really is. It looks so pretty, and everyone's so nice, and you're just like, oh. And that was basically, so I applied to go to Cambridge as a mature student, and somehow got in. And that's kind of, that's where like I am now. I'm in my last year
of
my degree for English, and then, you know, I've got to figure out what I'm going to do after that.
Shit going on. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, and but the thing is, like, within all of that, what's been really nice, and it's like what I'd like to think of, like, the advice that I took from Guildhall when they said, like, you need to go live. The best thing about when I was working was that that was when I got into the amateur dramatic stuff. So yeah. That was when, because basically from teaching, I was going, no, I really miss it. Like, I really miss performing, but I want to do it without the pressure of everything, because I hated so much of that from drama school. And I literally just searched like crazy, like the terms of like Oxford drama auditions. Like, I was just like searching, and I basically found OTG, Oxford Theatre Guild.
Yeah.
And they were auditioning for King Charles III. And I was like, I don't really fit the age ranges of the two female parts. Like, well, one of them I did, the other I really didn't. And so I said, like, oh, do you know what? I'll just go and see what happens. But I was convinced. I was like, my self-esteem was so low from drama school. I was like, there's no way I'm going to get anything. Like, they'll take one look at me and be like, what are you doing here? Get out. Then I got a part, and the part that I thought I wouldn't get because of the age range thing as well. And it was my friend Dan who was directing. He's now a really, really good friend of mine from that. So then I started just doing more and more OTG stuff. I also did something with Dorchester Festival, which I got through literally having done a show with someone who got cast in this Dorchester Festival one as it was Romeo and Juliet, got cast as the Friar, and they were still looking for Juliet, and he recommended me. And then, like, so I auditioned. So, like, stuff like that is crazy, how much, like, doing one amateur theatre show, like, once you're in, like, it's crazy. And that was what I loved. And doing that alongside while I was teaching, alongside when I was sort of applying for Cambridge, and I was like settling into more of, like, you know, I don't know, like, it was a really stable time of my life, like, in the sense that, you know, I had like a job, and I had like my hobbies, I had my friends, I had all that, you know, you start dating, all that sort of stuff. Like, you've got, like, I don't know, like, I think for me that was the most I've ever kind of like not had my face shoved in a book studying like I was at school and trying to get some kind of validation. Like, everything I was doing was kind of just for me, and that was really good for me and really important. And I think for me the best thing that I learned was then coming back and doing King Charles III, which also what really helped was Dan, who was the director at the time, was really positive. Like, he was very positive about my performance and extremely helpful, and like gave me back some of my confidence in that. But also within that, like, I realized from doing then the series of Amdram shows I did over the course of that, I know that I got so much better. Okay. Like, I know that I did. Like, I could feel it because I was using all the stuff I'd taken from Guildhall, and I was always doing it. Like, I was trying to apply it to my performance constantly. I was like trying to always remind myself of like what I'd learned there and the stuff I'd liked, and like I was using it. So what I mean by that, so like a really good example is some of the toolkits or whatever, like at drama school, that I found really helpful was stuff where we would really take what it is that the character's trying to do and then do an exercise where you're actually literally trying to do that. So one of them, for example, was I had to do a speech in which someone's desperately trying to convince someone to sort of listen to them and stay. And the thing they made me do in the drama school is they had the guy, you know, opposite. So I did it to him, and they said, right, the issue is I'm not like, the emotion's not coming through of how much you need this person to listen and stay and listen, like, listen to you. So what we're gonna do is they're like, person who's opposite me, like, was another actor in the space, you're gonna run around and desperately trying to get out of this room that we're in, and you're gonna stop them. So of course it becomes a physical thing.
Yeah.
And like, obviously what ends up happening is you're just sort of saying the lines as you're desperately trying to get this person to stop running away from you. And also, like, I remember like blocking the door at one point. But the thing is, you deliver the lines in ways you've never done before.
Yeah.
And because you're coming from a genuine place of genuinely trying to stop them, which connects with what the actual intention of the script is, they match, you get a much more emotionally authentic performance. Yeah, so stuff, exercises like that for me really work.
Yeah.
When we did a Cheek by Jowl workshop for Andromache, they had me do a pronouns thing, and they just had me stand there and deliver this big speech I had to Cleone, in which I had to point at a different area for each person that I mentioned, he, she, they, Greece, like it kept going, and I started crying. And it was the first time I'd done that scene where I started crying, and it was because I realized in that moment, by doing this sort of physicalization of how much Hermione is surrounded by these people all kind of just shouting at her, wanting things from her, and her having absolutely no idea what she's supposed to do, and basically how trapped and like agencyless she feels, but how much she also wants to do something but doesn't know what she's supposed to do. And like all of those things start to come through just from like something really simple. And they call these exercises, I think in the book that Donnelly wrote, which I think is a really amazing book, is like they're called unblocking exercises.
Right.
They're designed to emotionally unblock you, and they're the ones that work the best for me. And that's why I'm trying to learn as many as possible to then be able to kind of like apply them myself and do them at home if I can. So things like that, because that's what I mean by like in terms of as genuinely as possible. One of the big things I used to say at drama school, which I really loved, was quite often in plays you'll have questions that you'll ask someone and actors don't realize how much they're not genuinely asking it.
Right.
Because they're so busy in like an actor space of I'm acting now or whatever. Actually, the best thing you can do is forget all of everything, like forget everything, and like just genuinely ask the question as if they're like, let's just genuinely ask. And I know it sounds really stupid, but like little things like that, like, are really helpful. And particularly in emotional scenes, because for example, in soliloquies, quite often you do get a lot of questions because they're reflective, they're internal questions. And one of my favorites in Andromache, because I keep going to that one because that is probably one of the most emotional parts I've done, was did he look at me back then as he does today? She says to Cleone, when basically like her guy she's engaged to is not interested in her and kind of rejected her constantly. And she doesn't know what she's supposed to do because it's an arranged marriage by their parents. And she's kind of desperately in love with him, or an idea of him anyway. And she doesn't know what to do. She's so confused and she's reflecting back on all their history and stuff. And that was one that I used to always try and make sure in the middle of, because it's kind of in the middle of the speech that I'd like to stop, take a breath, and just really as much as possible genuinely try and ask that to Anna. And I'd feel myself getting emotional because it's coming from a place of like you're using the thoughts of the character and you're trying to as much as possible genuinely think it and ask those questions. That for me is the biggest exercise of unblocking I can possibly give. I think like there was like other ones where, because for example as well, because Andromache is quite emotional, I had to really try and make sure the emotion built and I didn't start too high, because otherwise I was just been crying the whole thing and that would look awful. And one of the things was the last speech, which was the one where I was like ready to kind of really let go emotionally. That had, you know, the opening lines was like, where am I, what have I done, what should I do now, was like is the opening bit. And the where am I was always really hard because it's a completely sort of odd liminal space, and I tried to play it as sort of almost out of it as humanly possible. And one of the ways I used to do that was like when I was practicing, I'd kind of like do that thing where you make your eyes go blurry, so almost like you're really out of it of the moment, like that feeling of like dizziness or like not being able to see, get an idea what that feels like to like influence the line. And then what have I done, I think, is a really good example of one where, like, if you just, if I pick out someone in the audience and I genuinely ask it, and I just, I'd cry. And it's like one of those things where, like, I was never someone who could ever cry. Like, I really, and it doesn't happen every time as well. Like, I think, well, the other thing is, please never, as an actor, put pressure on yourself to cry. I mean, that's like another thing I'd say to directors is don't ever ask your actors to cry, because it's really hard. And the more you're thinking, oh, I'm not crying, I need to cry in this scene, the less you're going to cry. I think the best thing you can do is if you are genuinely as much as possible trying to get into the headspace and the thoughts and intentions, and like I say, genuinely ask your questions. Particularly, I find question asking, you'll be surprised how much when you have to do an emotional scene, your character's asking questions in some way, even if they're in a soliloquy or to the person. Just really like, and it's again going back to that thing that I used to be told at drama school of letting go. Let go and ask the question. Just stop thinking about everything else. Stop thinking about the fact that you're performing. Stop thinking about you're an actor, and just ask it. Like genuinely ask it, as if it's all completely real. And for me, that's when emotional heights come. I think one of the other ones, for example, which wasn't a question, maybe it might be more helpful, was one of the lines was, "He leaves me alone in the dark." Another one of my favorite lines in the whole play. And one of the things that helped that was I built this backstory of Hermione always feeling like every single person in her life always leaves her alone in the dark. No one ever sticks by her.
Yeah.
Or particularly with the men, certainly, but also her mother, and you know, she's got a lot of baggage. But the reason, so for me, the way I could get emotional on that line, you know, the emotion would come. I try not to say like get emotional, like I think like emotion will just come or it won't. Like, and I think that's what I mean by like don't put pressure on yourself, but like would be thinking about that as I said it. As I'd say that line, I'd be thinking about every person that abandoned me. You know, that would be how I'd be thinking about it. And it's another person. It's another person abandoning me and kind of connecting again. So that's where, like, again, like all these things really feed into this place of coming to the character as genuinely as possible.
Yeah.
And it's not even so much of there's you and there's the character and you have to work really hard to like get to them. It's bringing that character to you, actually, is what you're doing in all that work, because you're just figuring out what their thoughts are and then thinking them when you're acting, not thinking, did I deliver that right? Am I supposed to stand here now? Oh, I think that's the line. Okay, yeah, I haven't jumped anything. That's the what the line's like. Oh, I want to have it for dinner. Like, it's all that thing of where your headspace is in the, and as present as possible is honestly my best advice. I know that's like really probably not helpful, and I'm still learning myself, and there's probably way more techniques out there, but that's something that I often do, that I try and check myself with as well, because I know I don't always do it naturally. It's something that I have to consciously go, if I'm doing a rehearsal, I'm in the middle of a speech and I can feel I'm just saying things, I try and stop myself and go back and make sure that I'm actually saying them. Eye contact is huge. That really helps. Look at the person in the eye if you've got an emotional scene, and like I said, say it genuinely to them. Don't be thinking about anything else at all. Yeah, I think those, don't know if that's helpful.
No, that's really good. No, I think all, yeah, that's although you describe it all in detail, there is a, you know, what you, the last bit you said, there is a just the very basic thing of just, you know, clearing your own head and then filling it back up with the thoughts of the character, and make sure you are thinking in their mindset. Like you can't, it becomes very surface if you're saying the lines with emotion, passion, anger, whatever it is, in response to the text, versus it being a lot deeper if you're, well, A, responding to who's saying what to you, but also you're delivering what the lines are based on backstory, thoughts, ideas of what that line means to you and why you say it. It just, mm-hmm. it will naturally give a deeper kind of presentation of your character. So I think that's really helpful.
Definitely.
Obviously you had some benefit, also negative stuff as well, but benefit of going through a process where there were people who were trying to help you shape your abilities. And as you say, providing you with that toolkit, which is great. But for an amateur actor, just doing auditions and doing shows, and whether it is a big part, small part, just doing it, you know, do 10 of those and you will be 10 times better. But you know what I mean? Like you'll have an exponential growth in your abilities.
Yeah. For me, the place where I actually got more confident and felt like I knew what I was doing with acting was then afterwards and doing those Amdram shows. Like, I'm a really strong believer now in like acting's a really good space to kind of learn on the job.
No, experience is, it's unreal how much just doing stuff makes a difference. From a technical standpoint, moving into the actual doing of the stuff, what things were you learning? Like what would you say you took away from like the first few shows that you were kind of like, maybe just changed your view of it again, or allowed you to reevaluate how good it was, and also how good you were. And you know, like, because I mean, it's important to like, I've got a big thing about people understanding, like, you've got to be realistic. You have to be realistic, and that's not to say that you won't end up at a certain point that's better than where you are now. But if you want to play Romeo, and you're just not good enough for Romeo yet, don't give up because you didn't get Romeo the first time you auditioned.
Yeah,
like there's an arc to your own story, as well as, you know, all the other characters you play, that means you have to sort of go through a few things to get better. What is it that shaped you then? What, like, in those amateur shows, what would you say you were learning on the job?
I'm trying to think about it the best way I can. Because I remember when the big things, well, I think if I go through, like, the first show was King Charles III. And one of the things that was really good on one hand was it was the first time I got to take what I'd learned in training into an actual show. So that was like a part of it. But I think separate from all of that history, the biggest thing for me that made me grow was who I was working off of, genuinely. For that first show anyway, because I had such low self-esteem at that point, a big part of it was, so I was working up to an amazing actor called Ian Nutt, who I still love. He was amazing, and he is one of the best actors I've ever worked with. Genuinely, I think he's incredible. And I think it was the first time ever where I got a real sense of how powerful your performance can come when you're working off of a giving actor and you are being giving in return. Right, so, like, okay, the giving actor is like this idea of, like, someone who you don't spend the time when you're performing thinking about your lines or your delivery or anything. All you're doing is focusing on the other person and right, listening to what they're saying and using what they give you to then give back. And the whole idea is if both of you are constantly coming from a place of giving, you create something like really amazing. And that's the biggest thing I learned from that first show, was how powerful that is and how much easier it makes your life and how much better it makes you when that's what's happening on stage, when you're literally just being really, especially when you get on really well with the person, I do think that really helps.
Yeah.
But when you are literally just, and it was a play where it had a lot of duologues. Like, it was very much like that was my character, was mostly soliloquies and then a duologue with Ian. And I think it was the first time ever where I felt really safe in, like, the space.
Okay, so that's, that's
super. That was, like, a really big thing. It was the people in the space, I think, allowed for that, all of that to, like, happen. I think that's, like, the biggest thing that happened in that first show anyway, of, like, building my self-esteem. Because then the one after that was Romeo and Juliet, which was obviously a completely different company and a completely different style of directing as well. So that was with Dan, director, who was very much, he's not an actor director, but is extremely good visually and has really good sense of the themes and what he wants to come through in that way, and very much trusts you. And then I went with Caroline, another amazing director, but she is a trained actress from Central, like, you know, and so she was really good, because what she used to do with us was, like, much more about, she kind of used almost drama school style techniques with you on the play.
Right.
And it was a really nerve-wracking part, because it was, in compared to, like, Kate, for example, like, Kate was, like, she was a main part, but she definitely, you know, she isn't the center of the action by any sense. And whereas, obviously, Juliet, like, the second half, I didn't leave the stage kind of thing. And it's some of the hardest speeches I've ever had to do in my life. So the big thing for me with that one was beforehand, when I'd been at drama school, when I'd been told about, like, what my typecast was, I was told I'd never play Juliet.
Okay.
They were like, you're not soft. You're very direct and hard. And I remember finding that, I thought that was offensive to Juliet. I was like, what? And they're like, your Juliet's, like, soft and, like, passive, and you're just not passive. They were saying, like, you could never play anything passive. And so for me, getting Juliet was, like, the biggest.
Fuck you.
Like, yeah. Felt very good. But also the big thing was the director had a very similar view of Juliet. And I turned around and said, I think Juliet can be played a lot more fiery, because if you look at the language, and, like, this is where, like, my little academic brain came through. When I went, she instigates most of the action, other than when Romeo kills her brother, like, her cousin. She has nothing to do with that, but she's the one who makes all the decisions that come off of that. She's the one who decides to stick by Romeo. She's the one who takes the potion. She's the one who refuses. You know, she makes a lot of decisions. She has a lot more agency than I think people give her, like, credit for. And also all of the rhyme schemes show how much agency she has. In the balcony scene, she is the one in complete control. She cuts him off constantly. Yeah. And she's great. That's not to say she's also like ridiculously naive, but there's the both things going on.
I mean,
on
she's meant to be 13, right? So
yeah, still, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we just ignore that part because it's creepy and weird. But like, it's for me, the big thing that I learned there was it was the first time where I basically took what I kind of been told at drama school was bad about me and very tentatively went to this director and said, this is how I see the character. And what was amazing is I had a director go, awesome, and love it, and like really want to like work with me of how I saw her and bringing yeah. that to life within also Caroline's vision of the whole thing. So I think between the two, the first one was feeling like I had a safe space.
Yeah.
And then the next one was feeling like I had space so I could then say my own ideas or like put my own input into not feel like I had to be this automaton idea that kind of had been sitting in the back of my mind I'd been really struggling with, but also feeling like that was valid for me to say, oh, this is how I kind of see her. And what was, I remember really well because she like wrote over on postcards, and she wrote something like in it, like, you brought to the stage like a fiery, complex Juliet that I'd never imagined, but I fell in love with, or something like that. She like put in it. It was like one of the most like heartwarming things. Like, it's, I keep everything like that, like in my room, like it's all up on like my boards and stuff. And like,
I've got to write some better fucking cards at the end.
Oh, it's a Caroline's wonderful, like, one of the most wonderful women. She's great. But yeah, dude, she's really sweet. And it was really lovely. But one of the things I think it really taught me was like my voice or like my ideas aren't like something that like I'm allowed to use them, if that makes any sense. And that particularly in amateur theatre, like I found them really welcome, like
yeah.
a lot, because everyone's in the same boat. Like everyone's just trying to make the best production they can and enjoy it. And collaboration is a big part of that, I feel.
Yeah, definitely.
And yeah, so that was kind of, I feel like in Kindle's first, I got a bit of self-esteem. I felt like I had a safe space with people, like it reminded me of that feeling. And then Romeo and Juliet was where I finally kind of, like where I like took that and then kind of had some more agency in like what I thought I could say.
Yeah.
And then the one after that was Merchant of Venice, which was the comedy Outside, which by that point I'd really like my confidence had like really built from doing those things. And so for me, the big thing I learned at that point then was just having fun. Like I just that is like a production that I've had I had so much fun on.
Okay.
Like a ridiculous amount of fun. And a part of it, because also I went back to Dan directed that one as well, so I was like familiar with the director, which always helps, I think, as well. It was an amazingly fun cast. Like everyone was really welcoming and stuff. And you also like, I think what's really nice that I found after that point where like you kind of know a few people, so you'll kind of feel like you're like kind of used to like the amateur theater thing by that point. What's really nice then is you do have people in production who it's like you when you did your first one.
Yeah.
And what was I think what's really nice is like being kind of, so like for what Ian was to me in that first one of being the person who made it such a safe space and someone who I could go to about, I'm like, oh, can we run this scene? I'm a bit nervous about it. I'm like worried about this. Like, is this okay? Is this working? Like, being that person to like someone else, it always like comes full circle, if that makes any sense. Like, and I think that was part of the enjoyment. I think overall, and then it like all of that beds in like what I personally feel like I learned so much from being in the amateur theatre scene, particularly the Oxford one, which I think is a really strong one in itself. Like, I think sometimes the word amateur does it disservice to how good the shows can be. Like,
yeah, I think I have a similar feeling that amateur theatre, the stigma or whatever the word is that is attached to amateur theatre, does it disservice you?
Definitely. At least my experience, like I said, like when I think of some of the actors I've worked with in amateur theatre, I've watched them and in their performances and thought, in a way, it's kind of a sin that they're not paid, because like, Jesus Christ, they're incredible. And I think, but then like, if you said that to them, like one thing that is really nice is no one's there because like everyone's there because they love it.
Yeah.
And I think if that's what fosters that environment, that was so good for me post drama school, to be able to use what I'd learned at drama school in a safe space without the pressure that comes with, I guess if you like were into like professional scenes and so on, but it, because everyone just wants to do what they enjoy and like meet, and also you look most of the time, it's also very social. I think that's like a really other big part of it for me that I really gained from it. I think those experiences with amateur theatre are just as important as like what you learn in the like rehearsal room kind of thing, because I think what you really get a sense of is like community and friendship. Yeah. But that's what creates the safe space that then you're able to play and push yourself and learn. And also because it's not got that sort of professional competitiveness about it, I think the best thing I also found was sitting and watching other actors. Right. All of that, across all of them. And that's what I mean, but like, it doesn't matter if you're a small part or a big part, like you're always going to learn something from doing it, because even if you have one line and like, so you're not actually getting much like physical stage experience or whatever, getting to watch actors that you, particularly if you think they're brilliant, watch them and like think, why are they so good? Why is it that I think they're so brilliant? In what way can I use that? And then play with what they're doing yourself. Like, one of the biggest things that like I've always found is people have like really different speech, the way in which people will approach, for example, like a soliloquy in Shakespeare is very different, I find.
Okay.
And one of the things that I've always really enjoyed from doing Shakespeare plays and watching other people do it is the ways in which they break up like what you might think of like unities of thought kind of thing. So I'm someone who's very like, wherever there's a full stop or an exclamation mark or a question mark, like I do a dash, and those are like my like thought blocks.
Yeah.
But I've seen actors do like completely different stuff very clearly, and have very different breath control. And it's also one of those things where like I'm someone who, generally speaking, I think I'm like described as someone who like performs out. Like I'm very I'm more on the side of being big than small, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because my whole thing is, and I still do stick by it, is like, particularly when you're doing Shakespeare, one of the biggest things you want to do is try and communicate to the audience as much as possible for them to follow what you are saying. Like that's the hardest part when you're watching Shakespeare. If you don't understand what they're saying, then like that's that. So like the biggest thing for me is like understanding exactly what it is that I am saying and then desperately trying to communicate that to the audience. Like for me, like the best thing people can walk away with is feeling like they've understood what I've said in Shakespeare, because the language is so disparative. But what's been really interesting recently, I've been watching actors who I really enjoy who are much more introspective and perform sort of more inwards, as you might like call it, and it's not something that I naturally do that much. I'm much more outward
and I enjoy what the emotion of the character
making it just seem extremely natural in this sort of really slow thought process of them going, oh, for example, like a really good example is like I watched someone not that long ago doing To Be or Not to Be, and one of my favorite To Be or Not to Be's is Papa Sidhu, who did it at the RSC, and he's also someone who went to Guildhall, which is very interesting because I think this is some interesting like training habits. And he's someone who I think is someone who speaks verse like it's his language, you know, sort of thing, and is very, you know, you understand every word, and he really performs it to the audience, and I think it's brilliant, and I do really like that style of performance. But I was watching someone the other day who did this kind of extremely reserved version,
right,
in comparison, but it was equally as like thought-provoking. And I think one thing that it makes you do is then it makes you play, because I think the best actor is someone who kind of does a combination of the two, right? Mm-hmm. And it's spotting what your inclinations are like, right, in performance, and then having a go at doing the complete opposite and what that does for you. And that's the thing that I find when watching other people, you notice do that. And it's like really simple, stupid stuff that like you kind of just play with yourself and like you don't need to really like talk to anyone about. But I think one of the big things is like, while being in amateur theatre, a lot is gained from like having being directed and performing yourself that you learn, and working with other actors and all that kind of thing. One of the biggest things for me that I learn from is watching what's happening. Right. Like just getting to be in a rehearsal room will always teach you something.
Yeah.
And I think the best thing you could do is if you always be watching people, and when they're really good, go, what is it that makes them good? What is it that makes, like deconstructing it, and then applying that to like areas of your own performance that you think could be fleshed out more. Or what is it that I do then in comparison that like you know, I could try something new. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned from, like, when you say about that hole that I had before when I was at drama school, was it's just the flexibility. Like, the best thing you can be as an actor is, like, as flexible as humanly possible. One, because it means you're going to get on with your directors way better, but also because, like, the more you're able to go, yeah, I'll try that, and it might not work, and it might be absolutely awful, but the trying is the important part. Yeah. Because you're learning what you're good at, because that's also, like, I think for me the best thing from all of that is, like, I kind of know now what I bring to the table, and I think that's the best confidence you can have, because then it doesn't matter, like, how much some asshole from drama school says you need to give up or whatever. Like, yes, I'm probably never going to be someone who naturally leans towards maybe certain types of parts or whatever, because I'm not the best at certain, like, I know what my weaknesses are and what my strengths are.
Yeah.
But I do know what I bring to the table. Like, for example, for me, what I feel like I'm good at is Shakespeare. Like, I know the language well. I study it. Yeah. I'm good with the rhythms. I've done a lot of exercises, a lot of workshops in this stuff because it's my interest. And it's also something that I've also been reaffirmed by, like, other people. Like, other people have told me, like, you speak Shakespeare, like, well. Like, I understand what you're saying. And, like, for me, that's, like, the best. Okay, great. Like, and I think and that's why, like, when people, like, when I meet people and I say, like, oh, like, I'm an actor, or, like, I do acting, and they say, like, what type? I always say Shakespeare. Like, I think that is what I'm good at. Like, that's what I feel my strength is in. And I think that's really good for me. But it does mean that I know that, for example, I'm probably a bit weaker at, like, modern prose. And that's probably stuff I need to work on. But that's good. Like, that's good to know what you need to work on and what your strengths are.
So we've talked a lot about kind of, like, the practical stuff you've learned about acting, the theoretical stuff that you take on board and bring to the toolkit that you're creating, that sometimes will be useful. Some parts will be useful for some characters, some won't, but you're selecting the bits out of that toolbox to use. Mm-hmm. I would kind of like, just to, if we can, spend a bit of time on how you, the actual process from maybe start to finish, when you've got script, when you've given this part, you've got the script, and how you're then, like, shaping what appears on the stage.
So I think the best advice I have, get off book as soon as humanly possible. And I know some people find line learning a lot easier, and there's, like, lots of nuances to that. But honestly, off book, the sooner you're off book, you know what the lines are and you know what the cues are. Because that's the other thing. Don't just learn your lines, learn the other person's lines, is my other advice. Because also you can save them if someone forgets something better, if you know what their line was. But yeah, I think that's huge. Because you're going to be able to use, you're able to play so much quicker the sooner you're off book.
Yeah.
It's so important, particularly for me. Like, and I can have a habit of, if I know I've got a big part that has a lot, I'll learn my lines earlier normally than actually when I have a small one, which is really bad because my brain goes, I can learn that really fast. That'll take no time at all. And then I end up procrastinating actually doing it. Whereas when I'm like, oh my God, it's so much, I will sit down and really go into it.
Do you have a specific method through which you...
Yeah, I have a couple. I mean... So one thing, to be fair, I generally speaking, so my method is, once a scene is roughly blocked once, my hope is to go away and have learned that scene before I come back to do it again.
Okay. So
that's generally what I try and do. That's one thing that, like, so that's how I method I do it. Because I think one thing that can be overwhelming, particularly if you have a big part, there's a lot of lines, where do you start? And obviously one idea is to start at the beginning, but you're not necessarily going to be rehearsing in order. So I find actually...
Okay, that's
really
nice.
Looking at the rehearsal schedule and learning your lines according to that.
Okay, so let me take a step back then. Let me take a step back. How then do you like your rehearsal room and the process to unfold? What's kind of like, because that will feed directly into, I mean, I've reverse engineered that question in that you've just said that to assist you in learning your lines, you like the scene to be blocked, and you like to go away and learn the lines for the scene that you've done, and you also like to have a rehearsal schedule that kind of tees you up for what's coming down the road in terms of scenes. Mm. Now, that those things straight away are something an amateur director can learn from directly. Is there anything else within that kind of rehearsal room that you like to unfold in a certain way that really assists you as an actor to get?
So one of the things I'd say like a really good example of someone who I think is really good at this, or at least in my experience, is Dan, who I did King Charles III with and did Merchant, and I did Yes, Prime Minister with. So I've done a few of his shows now because I just love him. And what I found really good about the way Dan did it anyway was the way in which he'd group scenes for each rehearsal at the initial part were very, what he saw as sort of individual snapshots of arcs, like the miniature arcs, if you like, within then what is the bigger arc of the entire character's journey. So I think that's something, at least in my experience, I found really helpful in those early ones. Because also, you know, they're quite small cast because of that as well. So you just kind of, it's not super overwhelming. There's just like a few of you at that point. And then what starts to happen is, because obviously as time goes on, more and more scenes start happening, more and more runs and so on. You start meeting more of the cast. And it kind of, I found that socially, it blends quite quickly and quite easily, because you know I'd be doing that and then the next bunch of scenes I'd have would be when Bassanio and Graciano arrive, right? So then you kind of get to know them, and then you know you're doing all these different scenes. So basically by the time you're actually all in the rehearsal room together, which don't get me wrong, like that happens still fairly early, like that's kind of normally like the first couple of weeks, for example, of rehearsals, those kind of bits are done. Everyone actually knows each other pretty well. Like you're probably, there's only probably at most one person you haven't met.
Right.
In an individual case. So I think that really helps with cast bonding. And because you've always got that skeleton, you've always got an element of rootedness that I think, particularly if you're an actor who kind of needs that, you know, you need to have like an idea of roughly where you stand and where you enter. Like all of those worries are very quickly
dispelled.
Pushed down. Yeah, dispelled. Yeah. And then after that, all the play really starts to come in. Right. So I think that's something like, I don't know, like I think as a director, like, That I found that really effective, but also people are different. Like some people probably not like that, and that's okay. Like I think everyone,
no, of course. I think it's just a matter of like getting an understanding of what someone might like. So if you're a director, but also that you know there's coming across an idea that you've not tried before, because a lot of people will have done a couple of shows and then will be directing, and they'll follow the rules or the tools that they learned from that person. Okay, so that's creating that initial space and understanding that we've got. So we've got the, well, I don't know what the constituent parts are. We've got like the safe space where, as an actor, you feel like you can interact with your fellow customers and your director. You've got a space in which your opinion is valid, and you've got a kind of a basic, as you say, skeleton structure of the scenes that you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's setting our foundation up.
Mm.
What then is happening that allows, you know, gets us to the point that we're talking about in terms of that kind of direct response stuff?
So I think then the work that happens underneath that, like I said, obviously getting off book really helps. One of the things that I find really important, and I've learned lines anyway, like, and I think this feeds into then what happens later, is I learn them by what I consider to be thoughts. So I go through, like, for example, if I have a speech, again, I'm thinking very much in like Shakespeare terms, so this doesn't always quite work in prose, but generally speaking, if I have a speech, I'm fine where like full stops, question marks, exclamation marks, and that's it. No commas. Take out the commas, if anything. I actually remove them completely. And like I do big dashes, and when I learn the lines, because I like to write out, because that's just my memory, I will literally write them out in like sections, and I will have like a big gap in between them.
Right.
And I learn them in the thoughts, and it doesn't matter how, because obviously with Shakespeare, like you can get like a long amount of lines before the next full stop or whatever. I will learn it in that chunk, like because that's the thought, that's the area in which your brain's in.
Right.
So that's really important, I think. And you can do that to like even like miniature speeches within duologues. Those are always where the full stops and exclamation, whatever. That's where the twists are happening in your thought, in the character's thought process. So what's also important as you're doing that is that's when you start analysing those. And you'll be doing that in the, I find when you're doing that in the rehearsal room mixed with also your own work at home is like the best combination. And with that, obviously, it becomes motivation and intention. And it's at that point as well that I find that once you start getting those ideas of what's motivating you, you're going to either start to clash with or suit the sort of skeleton blocking you've done before. So for example, you might have had before that you're like walking towards someone else, like a certain point, like touching them, whatever, but you might have found that actually reading it and how they're feeling to walk towards them feels really counterintuitive.
Right.
And like you and the director, like quite often I find that like when you've done that work together in the rehearsal room, you'll kind of meet that, like you'll both think that actually that doesn't look right, that doesn't work for what's happening in that moment or how that person's feeling. So I think that's like a really important next step, because like breaking those things down into thoughts is so important. On top of that, I also have a thing, but ever since basically one director brought it in, I've used ever since. One of the things she had us do was these series of questions, and then she put together a PDF of everyone's answers for everyone to read.
Okay.
And it was all from the, like asking questions. So it was like, what does your character say of themselves? Like, mm-hmm. they describe themselves at all? What do other people say of you in the play? Like, particularly when you're not there, if you're talked about. I'm trying to remember all of them because I have it on like record, because I do it for the characters now. Yes. One of them is like, what's the happiest moment? Or like, at what point in the play is your person happiest and why? What's the moment in which your character is saddest or angriest? Like, you're the lowest point, like the highest and lowest points, and why? I'm trying to remember. I think those are the only questions I can remember right now, but I think there are others on there. And I'm pretty sure like this is like actually like a standard template. Like,
I was gonna say, I might try and find it.
Yeah, I find that really helpful, because you start to get a sense of not only how your character sees themselves, but how other characters see them. And the thing is, both have to exist at once. Like, the audience have to, it won't work if a character says something about someone like, oh, they were like that, and then you weren't, because the audience will go,
yeah, she's so stroppy, really?
Yeah. Oh, okay. For example, one of my favourites ever is when actors don't realize they haven't spotted something because they're doing whatever, like they've, you know, got in their own heads about the character, and they have a character like in the moment be like, calm down or something, and like they've just like not shouted at all. And it's really funny, but it's actually really easy to do. Like, you see it a lot. So it's little things like that can really help. But also, like, one of the things I found that was really interesting with doing Andromache, for example, was all of the stuff where Hermione talks about herself. It's really nasty. Like, she's very like, it's where I found the sympathy for her, because like that's what I was like, okay, she's deeply insecure. Right. Like, all of the stuff was, you know, this horrid, you know, like this sort of like internal, like was there, she's that proud, you know, like really like horrible, like beating herself up with what she thinks people are going to say about her, kind of thing. And that's her own perception of self. But then what's interesting is, at the same time, all the people who talk about her, you've got the mixture of the guy who's in love with her, who's like obviously like very superficial because it's all just about how she looks, but then you've also got the guy who hates her, obviously, you know, who calls her like a she-devil and things like that, but it's a different type of like negativity of what Hermione sees herself. Hermione sees herself in a much, like, the she-devil thing is this sort of manipulative, nasty kind of thing, right? So that's got to be there. People have got to see that in her. They've also got to see the sort of more vulnerable negative stuff that she sees of herself and that battle that she has. And I think that was, for me, like really interesting. And it was funny because when I did the sheet on that one, we had a second read through, and I've never had one of those before. So we did a read through at the very beginning, did a whole load of rehearsals, we're kind of at the point where people were starting to get off book, and then sat down again and did another read through.
Okay.
It was really interesting. I've never done it before. And it was interesting as well because people understood, you know, at the first read through, everyone's still kind of like getting the hang of what the hell's going on, what they're even saying. But by that point, what was really interesting was being to sit there and really listening to everyone else and really listening to what those characters were saying about my character. Right. I think that's really important. I think that really helps understanding like what you've got to portray. Because I think the other thing that people can get caught up in is, particularly if you're playing a villainous character, like obviously everyone knows you can't play a villain thinking I'm the bad guy. You have to find what you find sympathetic about them, which is important, but sometimes people can get caught up in that and almost start getting defensive about their character when people are like, because, you know, they're a Daryl Resin, they're like, well, actually, they're traumatized or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, I think that balance of knowing what the character says about themselves and what the other characters say about them is really important, because it keeps you in that space of, like, both being sympathetic but understanding also the expectations that are kind of set and need to be there
Yeah, there's a there's an element of, you still have to portray the character that the playwright wrote. You're not now conjuring up a whole new backstory with a whole new life, and you're now presenting the character. There is still a character on the page that needs, you know, is part of the story. Yeah,
exactly. And so I think that's like a really important part to getting to the point where you're really comfortable in your lines and then able to share like that generosity thing, because the reason you're able to be giving like that and able to respond is because you start to know the character's almost like psychology or whatever you've built around it really well. You start to realize the lines where, you know, what you start to get to know their weak spots, things that like set them off, for example, or don't, how they feel about other people, all of that sort of stuff. The basics of like how you think your character thinks is basically what you're getting from all of those things. Yeah. And once you're in a space where you know your lines, you know how your character thinks and responds to things, you're able then to kind of let all the work go and listen. And if what they're saying you think your character would react to in whatever way, you do that. Right. And that's then, and then that keeps going. And I think that's what I mean by like you have to do the prep work first, because the only way you're able to do that is if you're able to understand. Like you basically need to be able to create how you think that character's mind works, and be able to be really comfortable and present with it, which like takes, like that's the prep. That's the, you know, breaking down the thoughts, analyzing what those thoughts are, what you think the motivation for each sort of thought kind of is, understanding their relationships to others based on what they say about you, what you say about yourself, bringing backstory. That's another thing I really like to do, is looking at through the script to understand what the history of your relationship is before the play starts to each person, particularly if you're in a play where characters have known each other for a very long time in the lead up to it. And that can be like, you can go to a certain point of like perspective, but you don't even have to go crazy like when they were 14 they did this kind of thing. Like you don't have to go that detailed, but to understand the history of the relationship, and also, but doing that with the other actor.
Well, I was going to say, that's why amateur really theatre important. Comes in so well, because actually what you said, you know, 20 minutes ago about the kind of social aspect that falls in line with some of amateur theatre versus what professional theatre might be, where everyone sort of comes in, does eight hours and buggers off home. If you go down the pub and start chatting about how these two sisters in the play used to play hopscotch together, inadvertently you're creating backstory and you're building this history together, and also for what happens on stage, without, you know, it's like a subconscious bit of homework that you're carrying out, because you're just continuing the conversation outside the rehearsal room, which is, yeah, I think amateur theatre is really good for that. So people need to be aware that it doesn't stop when they walk out the room. There's, you know.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I thought was really good was early in the rehearsals, one of the things James did when he didn't have us watching everyone else was he would say, okay, you two go away into another room and just sit and talk about backstory, like what you think the characters are doing. So like we used to do that as well, which I think really helped for Andromache, because that was very much a play in which we were playing characters who'd known each other since they were born, and you want the audience to feel like that. You want to feel like that's, and that was really, and that was one thing that made me really happy, because particularly me and Anna were playing two female characters who was, the idea was, you know, they'd really grown up together sort of thing, but with also the tension of their sort of class differences all being in there, and also the fact that Anna was playing a much more rational character than I was, and that tension as well. And I think something that was really nice was, I feel like we did so much work on what we thought Cleone and Hermione's relationship was and the history of that relationship. We actually did some improv as well, which was really good, which I found really helpful, actually.
That'll really test if you've got the character in you, if they start.
Yeah, 100%. So backstory, I think, is like the other really big one to kind of get to that generosity space, of knowing how the characters react and what they think of each other and what they care about. And like, you know, deciding, for example, oh, I think my character really cares about what this person thinks of them.
Yeah.
Just even something as simple as that, like, is going to change how you respond to, say, if you have a scene where that character says, like, insults them in some way. Because if you're playing, that hurts because I care so much about how you think about me, and then using that into whatever the line is, you know, whether it's defensive or trying to get that thing back or whatever, like, I don't know, like, it's, that's where the play comes in, right? Like, so
yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I mean by, like, you can't get there without the prep.
Okay.
But you also can't get there without all the safe space and having an actor who's also doing the same opposite you.
Yeah.
So there's so, like, there's so much that's in your control, but
okay.
Yeah, that was kind of how I'd say, like, with, for me, like, the prep, it starts with just simple reading it through, what the hell's going on, skeleton blocking, then going to the lines to learn it, breaking the lines down by thoughts, then analyzing what those thoughts are as you're kind of like learning lines, and taking that analysis of intention and agency and units into the rehearsal space, seeing about how that then affects what the blocking is in the room, then bringing in ideas of backstory, and relationships, how they see themselves, how others see them, to basically just build a fully fleshed person.
Yeah.
Is the idea, you know, you start with the skeleton and then you add all of
layer on.
Yeah. I don't know. I think for me, like, the fun of a play comes after you've kind of gone through all that, like, initial, what are the intentions? Okay, what are they doing here? And, like, figuring out what those decisions are and getting really comfortable with the language and all that kind of thing. Once you're at that point, which often is, like, when kind of the run starts,
yeah,
over then the course of the run, it's the play that happens afterwards, because you're able to have all of that, like, use what you've done and your intentions and how you, like, you think the character progressive of, like, feelings and, like, motivations are. But, like, within that, like, everything's up for grabs. Like, you can kind of do anything. And, like, for me, that's where, like, the enjoyment comes in the play, because that's something that you always start to do once the run starts going on a lot, because you're doing the run every night. Like, it's very repetitive. So actors do, like, once they're comfortable, they start to play with it. And that's, like, the most fun, particularly if you're working with people who get on really well, then you have, like, a natural back and forth with, who's able to play with you. Because that's the other thing, like, if you've got an actor who, like, if you're not doing the same thing every time, it, like, freaks them out and they can't handle it, like, you can't really do that. But if you're two actors who are quite able to, like, bounce back off of each other and hear each other and, like, respond, it also creates a much more, like, authentic performance, because you're, like, listening and reacting rather than, and now I walk over here and my line is delivered like this, with this exact intention.
Yeah, and if that person doesn't walk to the left and say their line then, what do we do? Oh no, we're in real trouble now. We can't. Yeah.
Exactly. That was one of my favourite things about Andromache, I've got to admit, when we did it, was James didn't really have any prescribed blocking. It kind of set over time, for sure, but a lot of it was the psychological and emotional intention was a lot of the work.
Right.
And then I was really lucky in the fact that, I think as well, me, Sid and Anna, who kind of had the most, like, in, for my half anyway, the scenes together, I only had one scene with the other characters, and all of us, I found, were people who you could really play off of, and if I delivered a line slightly differently, Sid would really pick it up and, like, then give me something different back, and then I could play with it. And a lot of our exercises was doing that repetition game, where you repeat either, like, something about someone, like, you just, like, notice something about them, or you say, no, it's you, it's me, and we're here. No, it's you, it's me, we're here. It's that exercise.
Yeah.
We did loads of that before then going into scenes, in which we're just playing with intention and, like, giving, listening to each other and responding, which I really enjoyed, and I think is what made for me those scenes really good, because over the course of the run in particular, we played more and more with how we could do things and deliver lines. And it's what makes it really fun and, like, feel very authentic. And also it makes you feel like you've given a good performance afterwards. I always find if I'm doing something where it's very, like, robotic in intention, or, like, you do the same thing every time and there's no play, you start comparing yourself to previous nights a lot more.
Right,
and you'll come out,
you've got a base level that you can judge against, and therefore
and you come out going, oh, I don't think I did as well that time,
yeah,
or something like that. And that's, like, that is, like, the yuckiest feeling you can feel as an actor, like, one, because you're not in it if you're thinking that, like, at all. Like, if you're comparing yourself to, like, how you did it before in the moment in which you're delivering it, like, you're not saying those words with any, like, genuine presence or intention. And if you're coming away going, that wasn't good, or, like, that wasn't as good as I've done it before, that's not as good as I can do it, or whatever, I find that happens more when you're doing that sort of, like, robotic intention thing. Yeah.
And the problem is that if you've got a live audience in front of you, I mean, Christ, they're going to react differently as well. So you're not going to get a true bearing of how well you've really done. Some nights they'll just be dead. You'll be looking out at faces going, why did you guys buy tickets?
Yeah,
and you deliver it the same way the next night, and there's uproarious applause and laughter in exactly the right spots, and people crying on the front row and all that sort of stuff. It's like, if you're basing your judgments on how well you did on, that in a prescriptive manner, you're screwed, because you're not going to get the feedback as well from the audience, because they're so different every night.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's really good. It's brilliant. Is there anything in your head that we might not have touched on?
I think, like, if I'd had any lasting advice with any of this, is also the idea that people can sometimes think they're too old to start or get into things. And I think that's a really big myth that needs to be dispelled 100%. Because I think that's something that I had to come to terms with when drama school didn't work out, when I was sort of 18, 19. I'm feeling very like, oh, if I don't get into drama school now, I won't graduate in time, and I won't get agent, and I won't get to act, and all this sort of stuff. And if there's one thing that the amateur theatre world offers, but also presents in an amazing way, and I think really defies those ideas that come with particularly professional theatre, is that anyone can start at any time, and you will be welcomed with open arms.
Definitely.
And honestly, like, I've seen people arrive, never acted before, well into the middle age and onwards, and they're some of the best people in the room. And it's because one thing that can't be taught in any rehearsal room or any education system is like life experience. And the more you have, the better you are. I think that's the other big one, going to rehearsals, doing it as much as possible, will always make you better. But what will also always make you better is how much you've just lived and how much then you can bring to every character.